Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day.
Welcome to Indiana Sports Beat Radio, brought to you by the Hard Truth Distilling Company in Brown County, Indiana.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, it's time!
Three on the way. Oh! Elian! Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game!
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni!
Float game for the win! Ayler's gone! Goodbye, touchdown, Indy! Woo! IU! America! They got a football team now!
It's pretty simple, I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Now, from the Hard Truth Studios, here's Jim Coyle.
Let me get myself added in there. I hope everything is going well for you and you're having a great day. Welcome back. Indiana Sports Beat Radio coming to you on this Wednesday. Looking forward to, I guess I could say I'm happy to be back in studio, but not exactly. I wasn't exactly torn to pieces in Puerto Rico, but good to be back with you and appreciate everybody. And no matter where or how you're listening, whether it's on one of our great affiliates like 97.7 ESPN, The Ref, always the right call. There in Evansville, 1230 AM, 104.7 FM, WJOB, the voice of the region, and in Fort Wayne on Fort Wayne Sports Station, 1380 The Fan. How is everyone? Good to, it is good to be back in the studio. So, I'm reading the, glad to have people in the chat line as well. If you're following along on social media, make sure you hit the subscribe and like buttons and all that. Plenty to talk about as far as basketball. Got a really good look at this team. And I was thinking, basketball has 3 months yet to prepare for the season. Football has less than 3 weeks to prepare for the season. So, one's on a timeline, baby. And but they get to break themselves in with three auto win games. Although that first game against Old Dominion will probably be a test. Old Dominion's going to come in here wanting to play. Wanting to give. So Heath asked, what IU Hoops player surprised you by contributions in Puerto Rico? It's a great question because there were a lot of contributions. That's the thing about this team. I don't know that you're going to have a leading scorer. Well, you're going to have a leading scorer, but it's going to be closer than you think. This is going to be a very balanced team. Multiple guys averaging in double figures, up to four. The five starters ultimately may average double figures. It's been a long time since you've had an IU basketball team like that. That means balance. And I think that that's what you're going to have this year. Lamar Wilkerson is probably going to be the leading scorer on this team just because he is so dynamic. Man, he can get to the rim, but he can shoot the deep ball. But Tucker DeVries can do things similar. You've just got so many guys that can score on this team and in different ways. I think it's going to depend upon the team they're playing on a particular night sometimes. But I guess maybe Lamar Wilkerson, just because you really got to see his dynamics on display down there in a full game for the first time for us. I kind of already had expectations of Tucker DeVries, but his matched. He did not disappoint. I've got to say, if the most surprising, I've got to say Trent Sisley. But I don't want to leave out Alexa Ristic either. Both of those guys play above their years. Trent is a plug and play, ready to play in the Big Ten. I mean, I'm not saying he's not going to get beat. He's going to. He's a freshman. But he is also going to be able to hold his own at times as well. He is strong. He has gotten stronger. You can tell that weight he's put on is muscle. And in practice, he gets pushed around and you got to push back. But these games were great because you got to see them be leaned on and see these players, you know, lean back and have the ability to lean back. Fred thinks Tucker and Trent will be the key. I don't think that that's the case. I think Trent's going to be a contributor, no doubt, but he's not going to be the key. This team has some, you know, Alexis. There's another guy that is going to surprise. But Tucker DeVries, Lamar Wilkerson are going to be the heads of this snake, I believe. I believe those are the two guys that are going to lead this team in scoring more times than not. But again, it's going to be a very balanced team. There's going to be a lot of double-figure guys. So, Dave G says, the team that they played the last two games, how would you compare them to a Big Ten team? Well, they're very good. I'd compare them to Illinois without seeing Illinois, since Illinois is built on an Eastern European teams. So, right off the bat, you got that. These guys were not freshmen in college. Most of them were not in college, to my understanding. They were more akin to a professional team. So this team was very strong, fast. They had length. I wouldn't compare them to a team that you're going to see in the Big Ten often, though, because they were better a lot of times. They were all athletes. I mean, all good-looking athletes. So it's hard to make that comparison other than, say, Illinois. The offense was probably different. It was more of an Eastern European offense. But Indiana, with their defense, was able to stymie that. And if you can stymie that style, I think that you have a pretty good shot of being good at most others. Five says, no way that Superbet team is better than Illinois. Well, I haven't seen Illinois play, but I have seen Superbet play, and it's a very, very talented team. But as far as comparison, yeah, that's who I would compare it to, because Illinois is built on Eastern European players. That was actually the question. As far as the competition level, well, they could definitely play in the Big Ten, let me tell you. There's no doubt. They're a professional team. Let me get a better understanding of it for you. To describe them, because I don't have the exact breakdown as far as each one of them. I'll have to find that in a little bit, but I'm trying to find an exact bio of that team. I'll work on that in a break, but here we go. Some quick notes on a mega super bet. 6'11", 20-year-old player. He's a 20. I'm not even going to pretend to pronounce these names. Markovic. I'll go with Markovic. 6'11", 20-year-old, a 2025 NBA draft second round selection of the Milwaukee Bucks. There you go. Posted 14.7 boards, 2.5 assists, and steals in for Mega in 24-25. So there you go, right off the bat. Djulovic, a 6'5", 19-year-old guard, placed name in 2025 NBA draft before withdrawing, played this past season for OKK Bogorad in the Basketball League of Serbia. Most recent season, he averaged 18.6 boards. There's a draft pick and one that put his name in and pulled it out. Drezic, 6'4", 19-year-old, played for the University of Georgia this past season. Lazar Gasic, 6'11", 20-year-old, was an NBA draft early entrant in 2025. A teammate of the IU guard Alexa Ristic on the Serbian U20 team. Let's see. Kroflik. He was a 6'6", 19-year-old. He played Mega Super Bet in the ABA last year after turning down high major colleges in the U.S. Decided to stay where he was. Let's see. Alexa Milinkovic. He's a 6'7", 21-year-old, plays professionally in Serbia. He was a member of the Serbian U-under 18, 19, and 20 national teams. Let's see. There's another kid who had interest coming from Purdue. Sibby, 7-foot, 18-year-old, played last year. Here's a 24-year-old. And but these guys all play for in Serbia, but there you go. So there it gives you a better understanding. They had some NBA level guys. I mean, not in the NBA, but drawing interest. Very good, very skilled. It made Indiana work hard without question. And that's what the thing that stood out. They pushed and pushed. Both of those games, and I'm not sure Indiana was quite ready for that, but they gathered themselves and took care of business. So they got back to it. Brian said, actually, they have 4 6'11 guys, I believe. But no, they didn't, not many. Well, a couple of them played together. Ristic knew a couple of those guys without question. Yes, they did. They had some NBA prospects. So it was, they're a good team. This was not some Joe Schmo team, I'm telling you. Just from watching them play, you could tell. But more importantly, it was interesting watching Indiana do the things that they had to do when they got down, stuck together, played as a team. I was impressed on how well they played as a team. I was impressed on how well they stayed up. I was impressed at the bench. The coaches keeping the bench involved. It was just a lot of good that came out of that, that I think Indiana fans are going to be happy with. I guarantee you they're going to be happy watching the team play. Win, lose, draw. This team is going to compete. They are going to compete. And this is a team, as Brian points out, as European pro teams go, they put a lot of guys in the league. This is a, yeah, this was no, this was not Indiana playing Indiana State. I can promise you that. Not close. Let's take a quick break. Got lots more coming up. Dylan Sins should be joining us on the program. Kyle Nedenrip. We'll talk about all that and more. When we return. From Indiana Sports Beat Radio, Jim Coyle with you on this Wednesday. Back with more. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Wednesday. Happy to have you along and joined by the great Dylan Sin. Where are you coming to us from today, brother, with that nice little greenage background, foliage in the background?
This is my front porch, just doing a little bit of a different angle today, so we'll see how it goes.
Dude, I just came up with a new angle, a segment angle for you, not necessarily for us, but it would work for us. But in the JG there, every Friday, you just do a little article, Dylan Sin from my front porch.
Well, I think that might be a hit. I think it could work. I think.
Sounds good to me. There's always a delay between us, I think. Just returned from Puerto Rico, and it was nice to see that open scrimmage when we had that, but nothing compared to what we were able to see down in Puerto Rico with this team. You got to see everything on display, the offense, the defense, effort, team camaraderie, team chemistry. There was so much that was on full display, and it was definitely worth it as far as having an understanding of what Indiana fans are going to be able to look forward to.
Yeah, it absolutely seemed like it. They played extremely hard. I think that was kind of interesting. Coming back from 20 down two games in a row is not something that happens on these tours very often, right? Usually you play these games, they're mostly exhibitions against teams that don't really have a chance. That was the case in the first game. The next two, you're down 20, and it's like, okay, what is this? And I really thought it was interesting that they were able to come back and keep battling in those games. It's what they're going to have to do during the regular season in the Big Ten. And so, obviously, you can see a lot more than I did down there, and I'm glad you were able to go. You probably have some extremely valuable insights on that. But, I mean, just number one for me was the play overall of Lamar Wilkerson. I thought he was fantastic from the few clips and statistics we saw was his ability in every facet of the game, right? He can score the ball. He can get to the rim. He can distribute for his teammates. He can defend defense. I think that was one thing that surprised some people was that he was not known as a great defender at Sam Houston, but he said early on that's something that he is working on it wants to be better at. And so we saw a little bit of that in Puerto Rico.
Well, for one thing, I absolutely, yes, you're correct. But I think this is something Darren DeVries demands of every player. If you're going to be on that floor, you're not just an offensive player. You are a defensive player as well. And the more and more I see this team, the better understanding I have of its construction. Because for the longest time, I kept shaking my head thinking, all right, why was there not just a little more, you know, a little more cachet added to this team, that was the big conversation. And they, not that they couldn't still use that, but I see the construction and understand it now. Whoo, buddy, you have to be a unique big. Reed Bailey is not your typical big. He not only does he get up and down the floor, he brings the ball up the floor with authority, not walking it up, which anybody could do. I mean, brings it up with authority and without hesitation. And I'm like, it can be eye opening to see a guy that size having that much control. And so there's that, but this team does so much as far as defensive pressure, offensive pressure. It's going to be fun to watch them. And I have I like to be careful. I didn't have a baseline really prior to this. None of us did. None of us said we had zero baseline prior to the open practice. And then that gave us something, but still not a lot. This gives me a baseline of where to look at this team. And I'm like, they're going to strain and stress a lot of teams They're going to put a lot of stress on teams, and that's what the plan is. And so I immediately thought of a team like Purdue because I know what they have. I know they're, we know what they're going to look like. They're almost identical to last year, not completely, but their key parts are the same, and we know what the offense is. And I start in my mind comparing these two teams, and I'm like, I'm not saying one's better than the other, but I'm not saying that one's better than the other, if you get my meaning. I can see this Indiana team competing easily with that Purdue team because of the defense that will come from Tayton Conaway, that will come from Lamar Wilkerson that you just mentioned. These guys, they're going to be able to defend those types of guys. And I'm like, Indiana can easily win that game, easily lose that game. But they're not going to be an 8-point underdog against them, I don't believe.
Yeah. I think that's fair to say. One thing that I'm curious about, and I think you could probably speak to this better than I could as someone who kind of highlights and watch the box, is how connected looked on both ends of the floor. Because I think that was something that people were kind of looking for, was, okay, how far along are they with their system, right? Because obviously they're not going to be ready. Like it's not going to be 100% by the beginning of the season. It never is. But then you ask, how, from your perspective, what you thought, how did they look in terms of, we know where to be next to each other. Do they need to go before November, I guess, would be my question.
I think that after three more months of practice, this team is going to be lethally dangerous. Because at the speed that they already move at is fast. And that's a great point that Dylan brought up. They're already in good enough position that both of those games, for whatever reason, they had slow starts. The second game, I just naturally assumed it was tired legs because of the previous game. This was the end of this long run of being in Puerto Rico, where not only were they playing these games early on, you know, we're in August, but they were doing these excursions. For the fans that went on that trip that, you know, had the packages, part of all that was on non-game days, they had excursions, whether they were going to the rainforest, kayaking, you know, whatever the case may be. But the team was doing that as well. Coaches were involved in that stuff as well. So that's one of the reasons why when you see the price of those things and you say, oh, that's unbelievably expensive. Not really. If you were a fan and you could have gone to that, that is one I would have recommended. That will probably be the best one that they ever have because it's the first one. It's a smaller group of people that went. The access was unprecedented for fans. They were around the players and the coaching staff on a constant basis, and so much so that I guarantee you Darren DeVries, because he's unbelievably personable, he knew every single person by face by the end of that trip. And after their second game, the players and the coaching staff went along the baseline and thanked everybody. But that's part of what this brings to this team here as Dylan rejoins us back to his normal confines there. I was just talking while you were gone away that one of the things that I did see is they are far along because of the speed that they move, Dylan, this offense. I'm amazed at how well they did, that they were able to make that comeback, 20 down 23 points in the first game. But it was all, both times, predicated on their defense. And in the first game, they chipped away at that lead in the first half, the latter stages of the second quarter. And they played quarters, by the way. which not sure of how much of a difference that makes. Basketball needs to go back to quarters. Men's basketball in college is the only entity that does not use quarters in basketball now. NBA, WNBA, women's college basketball, high school basketball, European basketball. American college basketball is the only one that men's is the only one that doesn't use quarters. I don't understand that. That's a different point. There's so many things you could talk about. Lessons that they learned. They realized that, hey, we're getting down. And, wow, they were able to turn up that intensity. But that's part of Darren DeVries. He is very calm, very cool cat. Doesn't sit out on the sideline. I don't think they even have a seat for him. Literally. He just doesn't sit down. But he's not like Rick Pitino, who's stalking. You know, Rick Pitino's always stalking the sideline. Back and forth. All right. Darren DeVries is just a little more cool. But there was a bad call that I thought could be a turning point in that second half of the second game. And I saw him get upset, not to the point of getting a technical or anything, but this team, they're the way that they can flip a switch, that's going to be tough on teams because they're going to not have seen that. And all of a sudden, boy, you're going to have a completely different look. And the speed and the ferocity at which this team plays defense. I mean, it doesn't matter if you're talking about Lamar Wilkerson, like you saw on that game-sealing defensive stop. Tayton Conterway, I call him a little bulldog. Connor Enright. Now, he's got to quit getting called for some fouls, but same way, man. These guys play tough defense. I saw Trent Sisley, a freshman, beefing up against guys. I mean, bowing up, not backing down, showing some strength. It was just fun to watch a team play and play together, to play to win. I haven't seen that from an IU basketball team in so long. I can't even tell you. I'm talking over a decade. It's been longer than a decade. I'm not talking about just Mike Woodson. I'm not talking about just Archie Miller. I'm not even talking Tom Crean, because Tom Crean's teams didn't play defense. This is going to enlighten or make IU fans, because this style of play for this team is going to harken back to the Bob Knight days, but even faster than that, on a faster level, with guys that might be more athletic. I think that's what Darren looks for: athleticism, tough mindedness. You better be gritty. I can't even tell you how many guys I saw diving on the floor for loose balls during games. So that, if that gives you an indication of what I saw.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what strikes me about that is that this is exactly what Scott Dolson saw in Darren, right? Like, that was the whole point of hiring him. The first, when they introduced him as the head coach, Scott Dolson talked about, he saw him with Drake in 2023 when they played in the same pod at the NCAA tournament as Indiana. He saw them with West Virginia in 2024 when they played in the Bahamas with IU. And so both of those teams, when he saw them, he was like, these guys are really, really, they play really, really hard, and they play really, really together. And he saw that with both teams. So this is not something that, like, it takes Darren DeVries several years to build with a roster, because he did it last year at West Virginia. That Bahamas tournament was in, what, November? And that was a couple weeks into the season. They were already doing that. They were already just so intense that it made an athletic director who from a different team, who was not actively looking for a coach at the time, to sit up and take notice, right? And so I think that is what that is kind of what I was hoping to see from this trip, was just, how far along are you in that way? How far have you gone toward putting the culture that you want in place, putting the spirit that you want in place? Because that's what you're talking about, is the spirit of a team. And it seems like they're pretty far along in that process, which is why I think that those 10 extra practices they got for this tour were so important. right? Like they, it was perfect timing for them to come in there, whole new staff, whole new team, and put that together. And I think that that is really good to hear, because you're right. There hasn't been an IU team. There have been good IU teams over the last decade plus here. There hasn't really been one that's gotten up into people in that way. And I think that that's something IU used to do, is they were in you and you did not want to be out there when you were on offense and they were playing defense. It was a chore to play against them. I think if Darren DeVries can accomplish that with IU this year, regardless of any other success or failure they have in the win-loss column, if he can make it so that teams go out there, it's like, man, I don't want to play IU. This stinks. Like that is the goal for this season. And I think
that is the exact opinion that I come away with. Because I think of individual players, and that's, I hearken back to when I was younger. I'm like, oh man, this guy's he's like a gnat. You know, you can't get away from. That's what Tate and Connor Way and Connor Enright and these guys are. It's like up in your face, up in your jersey type of defense. And I don't know that the Big Ten officiating, that's going to be interesting to see, because it's a very, very aggressive style. And by aggressive, I don't mean fouling. I mean aggressive, a more modern style of defense, to be honest with you, that I think that Indiana would be well served to bring in some Big Ten officiating and use that during practice, because yeah, it is a very, very aggressive style of defense. And I thought the officiating was done very well in Puerto Rico. It was, I don't know if they were local guys or where they were from, but they were, you know, it looked to be international. It was called pretty cleanly and it ran smoothly. And I can only hope that, because we think of the Big Ten, we think of big banging, bruising and all that. This ain't that. But then again, you've got an Illinois team who's built on Eastern European players. And I've talked about it before. This is going to be the thing, man. We're going to see more and more of this. I've got to take a quick break. Dylan Sin from the Journal Gazette in Fort Wayne there with us. We're back with more Indiana Sports Beat Radio right after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Wednesday. Glad to have you along. Jim Coyle with you as always. Dylan Sin in here as well from the Fort Wayne Journal Gazette. And, you know, now my question is, Dylan, where will this team finish in the Big Ten? I know we're getting ahead of ourselves, but hey, that's what's fun of this, because there was so little expectation that wasn't really. I mean, I know people. I see fans asking about that and whatnot, but I'm like, you know what? Hey, I no idea. Now I've got an opinion, at least opinion. But part of this is it's hard because I don't know what UCLA is like. I haven't seen UCLA. I don't know what Michigan State is like. I haven't seen Michigan State. Michigan and Purdue, obviously the two favorites. But, you know, who is there going to be a surprise team? USC, do they get better? I don't know. So you've got Iowa with a new coach. But – boy, let me tell you this, and I can guarantee you this to be a fact. Indiana fans are going to be much happier with their selection as head coach and the style of basketball they get to watch than Iowa fans. Iowa fans are going to be falling asleep during the game as they're winning or losing 58-52. Indiana scored in the 90s. On all of these games against the first one, I don't really count. It was a team that it was not that big of a deal. These last two, that's a legit team. I mean, they've got NBA prospects on there, but Indiana is going to absolutely be an NCAA tournament team, in my opinion, without question. I didn't have the answer to that a week ago. I think that they end up in the upper, I don't want to say the upper half, the upper third of the upper end of the Big Ten. They're not just the upper, I see them in the top eighth at worst, which is easy to say, I guess. I should raise that a little bit. The seventh probably are better.
It's not really easy to say because they're a lot of people have them picked 12th or 13th. So yeah, that is interesting. So I think that is a worthy goal. So here's what I've been saying is that my goal for Indiana is to, because there are very few teams that have done what IU is trying to do, which is build an entirely new roster in one offseason. One of the few teams that did that is Louisville from last year, right? Pat Kelsey came in there. They turned over the entire roster, brought in an entire roster full of transfers, and they went out there and they were an 8 seed in the NCAA tournament. They finished near the top of the ACC. Now, the ACC is not as good of a team as the Big Ten, or is not as good of a league as the Big Ten right now, so it'll be a little bit more difficult. But that is kind of my baseline for success. Did you get an 8 seed in the NCAA tournament, right? And so I think that is probably still where I end up with this team. And again, I do not have as much experience as you with them because I just saw the box scores and saw the highlights, but that you can kind of see that forming is this team is going to be a team that wins some games that it probably shouldn't just because like against more experienced teams, just because they play so darn hard, and they're going to lose at least probably a couple that they probably shouldn't because they're just learning to play together. Right. And so you hope that you're playing your best basketball in February and March. You've kind of gotten those tough losses out of the way and you know how to play together. And now you're really cooking. Right. And so that's kind of where I think they end up. It matters less that how well they do in the Big Ten, although that obviously matters. It matters more how well they're playing at the end of the season. Have you fully maximized this roster that you have? And so I'm curious about that. I think that eighth place in the Big Ten would be. It wouldn't be satisfying to everyone, but I think it would be kind of a good baseline for, all right, it's up from here, right? Because I do think that most places that I've seen have picked IU somewhere around 12th, and not in the dregs of the league, not that they're going to win six games in conference play, but just we don't know a lot about this team yet. And I think frankly, I think it's fair, but it's just because we don't know how these pieces are going to fit together. And now after seeing Puerto Rico, there is some at least significant indication the pieces fit relatively well together, and they're starting to figure out how to play together. And I think so you can start kind of seeing the arrow upward in terms of the stock of IU at this point.
Yeah, this is a repetitive theme, but if I needed just to put it in a synopsis, how Indiana fans will love this team because they are hard-nosed for one thing. They are gritty. I don't even know how many guys diving on the floor for loose balls. And I'm talking about the bigs. It didn't matter who it was. And I'm just laughing going, I can see the loose ball drills these guys go through in my head right now because it was clear as day. Nobody had a problem giving what they needed to give. There will not be a question of effort from this team. And I know it sounds like I'm sitting here being a cheerleader, and that's not the intent. I'm telling you what I saw. And partly it's because it's such a difference from what we have seen for so long. And I mean so long. This team is, you know, you hear about camaraderie and all this, that, blah, blah, this team's together. Oh, yeah, we really like each other. We've heard that for the last several years. It was all crap at the end of the day. It was lies. It was not true. That team last year, they weren't together at all. This is not that. This team pulls for every guy right down to Ian Stevens, who is he a walk-on? Isn't he a walk-on, or is he?
Yeah, I think he's one of the kind of grandfathered in guys, I believe.
Yeah, so right down to him. I mean, being in the game, up, standing up, and the coaching staff make sure that the guys, not that they needed to often, but they made it sure that they were in the game. It is, you can tell there is an intent, a constant intent to keep that circle joined. And they've done a great job. And DeVries doesn't do it by demanding. He doesn't do it by stalking. He does it by how he does it. And that is just simply demanding it. And he is getting out of those guys. The five says he's trying to temper his expectations, but I'm making it difficult. What, let me, here's what your expectations should be. This team is going to work their ass off. This team is not going to quit. This team is never out of it when they're down. This team is going to be fun to watch because they're going to give great effort. And this team is going to be fun because I think they're going to always be in the game. That's another thing that those comebacks showed, that, buddy, if you hesitate for a minute, look out. Indiana's not.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one thing that you kind of touched on there that I thought was interesting was the reports from Puerto Rico. I think you had a couple of them, was just how much these guys were off the bench at all times, right? Like they were up, they were excited for their teammates. It was I can't remember who it was, but someone said the official had to tell them a couple of times, "Hey, you guys got to sit down." That was you, right? Yeah, like they had to tell them to sit down, which is not something you see from a lot of teams, right? Like you see the replays of old NCAA tournament games, not just IU, but anyone, and guys hitting shots and players on the bench.
And these were exhibition games.
That's the point, yes. These were exhibition games, right? You don't expect to see that in this environment because mostly you're just out there trying to get some run. You're playing against someone you haven't played before for the first time. You just want to see how it goes. And these guys were into it from everything I have seen from the first tip to the buzzer. And even when they were down 20, which is really impressive to me, is that, boy, I'd be a little bit shell-shocked. If I went down to one of these tours and I played for IU and suddenly I'm down 20, I'm a little shell-shocked because that's not what usually happens in these tours. It's usually games against teams that don't have a chance. And then you get into a game against a team that has some dudes and you're down 20, it's like, whoa, what are we doing here? It would give me some pause. And it seems like that didn't happen for these guys. And I think that is really impressive to me and a sign of good things to come. It sounds like.
Yeah, when they were down 23 in the first game, I was like, well, okay, you know, this is the first time we've really seen them against something. So, and we know the goods that Supermax brought. So I'm like, okay. It's not a big deal because I can see the talent on that other team. They have got they were long and they could shoot. And I was like, yeah, okay, let's, you know. And then all of a sudden that switch got flipped and it was, and you slowly watched it happening. Then in that second game, okay, they're down 20, but they're down longer. In the first game, they started chipping away at that at the end of the second quarter, and it really had the momentum and came out of the halftime locker, just bam, and next thing, they're back in it. The second game, they were still down, you know, it would be 9-12, 12-9. It was just going back and forth, but it was one of those you just saw that, well, they could kind of keep bouncing around, but it looks like Superbet may be able to hold them off in this game because, hey, I'm thinking really tired legs at this point. You're at the end of this trip. They've been doing stuff every other day. You know, when they weren't on game days, they were doing those excursions at the sun, the water. You know, you've got to be just worn out. And so I was not surprised. But then here they did it yet again. So that was very impressive to me to do it the second time, although it was not quite as big a deficit. They were still down 20. But I think I had to look to see when they were down. But the fact that they did it with all of that up against them. So no quit. And, yeah, it's going to be fun. Lamar Wilkerson, we really got to see that dude's skills on display. And, first of all, Coach DeVries did a great job of getting the guys he got. Not to say there's not always someone maybe better, but I don't know that they would have fit. These guys all fit together. They all play together. There is no standout. There's no me on that team. And Trent Sisley, Alexa Ristic, both of those guys, they're going to be playing. And I mean playing instantly in games for IU. Ristic that's amazing. He's barely been with the team. I mean, he's barely been there. As a matter of fact, you heard Darren DeVries in the post say, I'm calling out stuff, and then I say, oh, man, he doesn't even know what the hell that is. And so, but yet you couldn't tell. It was very seamless. So it's going to be fun. Football and basketball seasons are going to be fun. Indiana should be happy because both of these big-time sports programs are in good hands. I don't know that Indiana basketball is going to have the first-year success that they did under Cignetti. I don't know that they're not. Because this team can go as far as I guess they want to go. But it was certainly an eye-opening experience, I can promise you that. And it answered a lot of questions to me for why Coach Darren DeVries got the guys he got.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what's really impressive is that he came into this and didn't have a single, like by a week after he got here, he didn't have a single guy on the roster, right? And so he went out and he had to find these guys. And so not only did he find them, but he brought them in, right? Like like Lamar Wilkerson could have gone to Kentucky. Remember, Kentucky wined and dined him. They wanted him badly. And IU got him, right? And it was that way with several guys, right? Like there were guys who wanted who St. John's wanted, and guys who other Big Ten schools wanted, and IU got them when they targeted a guy, they got them. And I think that is kind of the key to this whole thing. Is DeVries, he identified the guys that he wanted. He did a good job of doing that, and then he brought them in and he gave them a clear picture of what they are going to be on this team, what their role can be, what his vision for this team is, and he convinced them of it. And I think you can see that even at this early point, is that he convinced these kids of what this team can be and what his vision for it is, and they believe in it. Now, if they hit a 3 or 4 game losing skid in January, does that survive? Who knows, right? That's always the toughest part. But right now, that's as good as you can hope for, is these guys buy what Darren DeVries is selling. And I think from what we saw in Puerto Rico, I think they do.
What's up next for you, brother?
Yep. I will be I'm still covering fall camps all over the state, and looking forward to some more of that this week. And then next week, high school football starts. So we'll have a whole bunch of high school football preview coverage at journalgazette.net. So looking forward to that.
Well, if you're going to be around in a little bit, I may hit you back up to talk about a little football since I've been away. Kyle Ninrip should be joining us next for a segment, and hopefully, but I may hit you up after that if you're around. I'd love to talk some football since I was away from it for the last week. But I'll text you and see if you're available, my friend. Dylan Sin from the Fort Wayne Journal Gazette. Make sure, especially for those in Fort Wayne, that you have that subscription to and following Dylan Sin regardless. Back with more Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, on this Wednesday. Glad to have you along. I hope everything is going fantastic. How has your week been? I really do wish people could have seen those games that Indiana played, but at the same time, hey, those people paid good money to go down there, so they got in some exclusive looks, and it was well worth it. I'm telling you, it was eye-opening. Football season, just what do we got? 2.5 weeks. 2.5 weeks till kickoff. 2 weeks from 2 days from now. So it's not even really 2.5 weeks. It's barely over 2 weeks, or 2 weeks from this Saturday, rather, as the Hoosiers open up football season against Old Dominion at 2:30. And that will supply fans with ample time for pregame festivities, which they can participate in. And Indiana just coming off of its first scrimmage this past Saturday. Of course, Coach Cignetti sounds a lot like he did a year ago, and that is, I don't want to say doom and gloom, but you know how football coaches are. They want it to be best and be the best, and their bar is up here. But Kyle Ned ripped them, the Indy Star, joined us now. Kyle, how you doing, man? We're deep into the latter stages of fall camp. I was talking about Indiana opens up the college football season 2 weeks from this Saturday, which is, even though we see the countdowns, oh, it's 150 days out, it's 100 days out, all of a sudden when it's here, you're like, wow, it's really here. It's here. And that includes the high school football season. First of all, it's the first time I've gotten to see you in a few weeks. How are you?
Doing well. How are you doing, Jim?
I cannot complain, man. Just been busy, but fun, as so much going on. The high school season's around the corner. Lots of recruiting is starting to really become a bigger thing now, because the better the programs are in the state, it seems like it benefits the high schools, because it really generates buzz and more buzz in recruiting. Because when guys are going out of state to schools, that's nice and all for them, but it doesn't really generate the buzz in state. And when Purdue gets back around to being better, and I think that Barry Odom will get them to being better at least, that's going to be fun with, you know, although Notre Dame doesn't seem to recruit a lot of guys in this state. It's more, I've seen more success from the Ohio States and the Michigans than Notre Dame, but maybe that's just my bad perception.
No, I think there's some accuracy to that. I'd be interested to go back and actually research that a little bit more. Notre Dame does seem to get, you know, they it seems when they do come in, it's definitely for that top line guy like Mark Zachary last year, or you know, Sheldon Day or Jack Kaiser, you know, more recently. But yeah, I mean, they have a hand in the state, but they also are a national brand name, and they go wherever they, you know, pretty much wherever they want to, I would say. Ohio State's they're a program that when they come in, it's always tough for the in-state teams. They go after the top guys sometimes, always in here, but they seem to pluck out their share. You know, when they do want to come in, they basically get who they want. Michigan's had some success here too as well, but those are the tough ones to go up against. You know, those are the, you know, once they get Ohio State offer, it always feels like, you know, that's where they're going to end up going. Ohio State doesn't offer everybody, you know, when they do come into Indiana, it's tough. They have a footprint, obviously, beyond Ohio, and it definitely includes Indiana. A lot of kids grew up, you know, rooting for Ohio State because they're a brand name, so it's tough to beat them. But, yeah, I agree with you. I think Indiana and Purdue right now, with this class, doing a really good job, and kind of getting, you know, some of those guys that may be on the fringes of that top, you know, top level, you know, four-star type recruit. Monchun Sales will be a big one. That 2027 class will be a junior this year at Lawrence North, receiver. I can't wait to see what he does this year. And IU, I think, has some, you know, has a chance, because there are some LN guys on that roster that play his position at IU, with Omar Cooper and Davion Chandler. Both players that he knows really well. So I think there's some realistic opportunities there, but that's another one where, man, you're battling like Alabama and Michigan and, you know, the highest of high levels. So, you know, but I think there's some, you know, I think when last I talked to him, you know, IU was in that top five, you know, so I think they're a factor in his recruitment, but still a long ways to go with that one. I don't expect he'll make a commitment this season or anything. He can wait till, certainly till next year, you know, to make that decision. But, you know, just being in the mix for those guys sometimes, you know, who knows how with the transfer portal, how things work anymore. You want to keep those connections, and, you know, you never know, after a year of college, maybe they could come back to you. So, but yeah, I think both programs right now in a pretty good place with, you know, in-state recruiting. And Purdue getting Kobe Cherry from Center Grove definitely was a big get for them, who defensive end, who I think is going to have a great year this year. He missed last year with an injury, so he kind of slipped off the radar slightly, but he's a very good player who I think you know, will end up helping Purdue a lot in the coming years.
Yeah, and something I just thought of, Kyle, is now with RevShare, that may give these teams a better shot at being equal, on equal footing as well, because the money thing is, let's be honest, it's a part of it. But if you can get maybe a bigger share from, say, Purdue than whomever you're being offered from outside, that that will entice them to stay home, or whether it's Indiana, they can offer the same, maybe the same amount of money, but more playing time than an Ohio State. But something has to happen to, even if it's Indiana, who's had the most success here of recent, of course, they still, they're not, they've got to be able to break that Ohio State, what I call the barrier there, where guys, they want to go to that next level team. Indiana has yet to ever receive a five-star recruit. And that is something that I see changing within the next year or so, of course, but it hasn't happened yet. And I think that they're closer to doing that, but you just have to have sustained success. And now with the rev share to go along with that, and what Indiana or a team like Indiana right now, maybe Purdue in the future, can do at the end of the postseason, that that gives kids more of a reason to stick it closer to home, at least.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, I think the parity because of rev share, and that'll be interesting to track as well. I think, you know, and honestly, it seems kind of that way a little bit more now. You know, obviously the blue blood teams are still the blue blood teams, and they're all, you know, just sort of at another level. But you don't, it feels like we're in a situation where there's more parity. Maybe that's because of the 12-team playoff. It feels that way a little bit more so. And who knows what happens with that as well. Maybe moving on to an even bigger playoff. But I would say, it's a good thing. I mean, I think college football needs that. You know, you don't want the same teams kind of winning every year. And I, honestly, with the 14 playoff, it kind of felt anticlimactic to me anyway, a little bit. I think the 12-team, you know, you get some home games in the playoff. I would love to see them just stay 12. I don't know. You know, I don't know. Maybe 16 would be better. I don't know. But I still love having the home, you know, at least a first-round home game. To kind of add some element of, like, you know, we're playing for a chance to host a playoff game, which is awesome, which, you know, the IU Notre Dame is pretty awesome setting there last year. Even if it didn't go IU's way, it was still an awesome opportunity to play a home game at Notre Dame. So, but yeah, I mean, I think it'll be, you know, it'll be, I think with rev share, it could open some opportunities where, you know, these teams can't just, you know, stockpile every five star. So, you know, I think maybe that'll open things up a little bit for schools that haven't had those guys before.
Yeah. And looking forward to that, because that would then in turn make both programs better, more enticing to the local kids. But speaking of the high schools, their season about to begin as well. I don't know when is the actual game one, because I know that there is, I believe this weekend on Friday night, you have what we used to call the jamborees, but now they have scrimmages, which I love the jamboree, man. We used to, when I was at Floyd Central, we would go to the Providence Jamboree and play a quarter against New Albany or a quarter against Jeffersonville. And it was just a, you know, precursor, people poking out your chest, everybody, you know, you had all five area teams there. And so it was just a good start. But Cathedral versus Franklin Central, Fishers versus McCutcheon, Lawrence North at Kokomo, Bishop Chatard at Hamilton Southeastern, Ben Davis at Westfield, Carmel at Zionsville. Now, and many, many more. I mean, wow, I looked down through that list. Holy cow. How long... what's the difference between the scrimmage? What are they doing in these scrimmages?
Well, it's sort of a, you know, I'm going to go to one of them, I'm sure. I haven't decided which, maybe Center Grove Brownsburg. That'll be a fun one, I think. Two really good teams. But any, so you kind of go by, you know, there's situations basically. You run, you know, I forget the exact count on, you know, your offense will run like 15 plays. and then the other team runs 15 plays, and then you go from the then you start at the 30, and then you maybe run 10 plays from each team run from the 30, and then you go from the 20, like the opponent's 20, so you're running some red zone plays. So it's sort of a situational, and then most teams are shuffling guys in and out pretty liberally after the first couple rounds of play, even within the first groups of plays. So you there's a lot of subbing. I go to these, you try not to read too much into it. Like Brownsburg playing Center Grove, that's a semi-state rematch. Those teams, sometimes they're not going to give away too much. It's very vanilla sometimes, just because you don't want to give away everything to your opponent that you might see in a few months. But it's still fun. It's a chance to go play somebody else at least. And, sometimes it's really ramped up, with competitiveness and, so it gives you a little bit of a sense. I liked it when you mentioned the Jamboree. There was a couple of years there where Ben Davis, Westfield, and Carmel played. It was like a three team Jamboree, and they would that was a fun one to go to because you could see two teams one team play against two teams, but they went away from that. There's not very many of those anymore. There's a few, but most teams are just doing kind of the normal scrimmage on Friday night. And this will lead into, you mentioned the first week is actually the 22nd, which will be next Friday. So, we're 1 week away from that. And then we start really finding out more about all these teams.
Yeah, and that'll be fun for everybody to get an idea of how that's going to be. And as the high school season gets underway, who are the big dogs? I know that the good thing is each community gets to do this, whether it's Evansville, Fort Wayne, Southern Indiana. You've got them all that gives you a taste of this. And people have been waiting, baby. I think everybody's fired up for football. And I talked about the state schools in college. When those schools are better, I think it also ramps up the fandom for high school sports as well. I do hate that the Big Ten, or I guess all of college football, has gotten into the way of having Friday night games. Not that many, but Indiana plays one on September 13th, Friday the 13th. Boy, that's not a lucky day. But they play Indiana State on top of that. Nobody likes that, but it is what it is. But how much is that even really impacting high school?
I don't know. I mean, I don't love it. I don't think any of the coaches I remember Tom Allen railing against it. And
they hate it.
Yeah, I mean, it cuts into their, recruiting a little bit, or, if they want to go see a guy play. But like a lot of things in college sports, TV just runs it. So there's really nothing they can do. It's like, we're kind of just in a world where TV runs everything about college athletics, including the formats and everything. So it's just sort of at the mercy of that. I mean, I think we're beyond the point of going backwards on it. I guess I'm a little bit a traditionalist that way. You want to get everything off the plate. So you got high school sports for that night anyway. That's kind of tradition. The communities within the school, you want those kids, instead of going to IU game or whatever college game, to come to the school game. And I think most of them do anyway, at least from the students' perspective. But if you're a parent, I could see if you have season tickets to IU or Purdue, you're probably going to go, because you're paying for that, you're probably going to go to that game instead, or have to give, try to get give those tickets away somehow, or sell them or whatever. So, I don't love it, but, I don't know that it cuts into a lot, but it kind of divides our attention like a lot of things anymore, rather than kind of giving that night to high school sports. But, like I said, we're probably beyond, it sounds like old men yelling at the clouds type of thing now to debate that. But I don't love it, but I don't think we're going backwards either.
Yeah, no, you're not putting that green toothpaste back in the tube, because it is definitely colored green for certain.
Yes.
But the start of this football season, what are your expectations? And I guess in the overall, someone asked, who's Kyle think is going to win the DAC?
Oh man, Yeah, that's a little bit out of my range. I mean, the best teams up that direction.
Where is that? Which conference is that?
The Duneland. That'd be the Northwest Indiana.
I
would say the best teams up there are the Crown Point is definitely, I think, going to be good again.
Penn. What about Penn, man? When I was in school, Penn dominated.
Yeah, they're sort of they've been good but not great here in these last few years. I think Merrillville's going to be good. They do have
the Hobart Brickies.
Yeah, they dominated. Yeah. They were good a few years ago again. But yeah, I would say up in that direction, that corner of the state, I'd say Crown Point, Merrillville are probably the best teams to watch. Always a strong that is a strong area for football. But I would say Crown Point's kind of on a level where, I think they have the attention of the 6A teams down in central Indiana now. So I think they're a team that possibly could, get to that semi-state again like they did last year. They lost pretty bad to Westfield last year, but did beat them 2 years ago and made it to state. They have some people they have to replace on both sides of the ball, but they do have Trevor Gibbs, who's going to IU as a tight end or linebacker. Who's a really good player, and I think he'll be in the mix for a lot of awards by the end of the year. So that's just a very solid program. They've done a good job building that up. And then in 5A, like I said, Merrillville, I think, and I think Penn you could throw in there as well, will be a factor. They're always solid. They're maybe not the power that they once were, but still a factor up in that direction of the state.
Of course, in the metro Indianapolis area, you've got the usual suspects, Ben Davis and Carmel and all. Who is there a surprise coming this year?
I mean, you mentioned Carmel. I'd be curious to see what Kevin Wright does there at Carmel, being back as coach now. I think that'll be fun to see what they do. They were 3-7 team last year, so they are a team that program that's obviously been very good over the days. Especially when Kevin was there about a decade ago. So, I think they'll be a team that maybe you wouldn't really call Carmel a surprise, I would say, but, they
might never can when you have 40,000 students.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not like they're the little Milan team winning single class basketball. So, but I think they'll be a team that, a team that only won 3 games last year, I think you could maybe fit them in that category of a team that could surprise a little bit. But I would say, I would say it'll be a year where, there 6A's always got a lot of balance, and I think we'll see that again this year, especially around our area. Just a lot of teams that can win it.
Yeah. So what's coming up next for you at the Indy Star? I know there's tons of coverage coming out as always.
Yeah. I mean, we've got our Super 25. I saw somebody, complaining I didn't mention New Pal. New Pal is very high on my list of teams. We had our Super 25 come out today, which is a ranking of all the teams in the state, any class. And so that's out this morning. I was kind of conservative with that a little bit, going off a lot of last year. I think Brownsburg, putting them number one, I think is fair. I mean, they have 10 starters back on offense from last year's title team. So but I have New Pal very high on that list as well. They're moving up to 5A this year, but they have 18 starters back. And Kyle Ralph, goes without saying, does a great job every year with that program. So they may be the favorite to win 5A this year. They're that good. So,
oh wow,
yeah. I mean, they're
now legit. That would be extraordinarily impressive for a team to move up to 5A and win it.
And they have Cathedral in their sectional, so that won't be. That's, I mean, I can't wait for that. Yeah, that possible game down the road would be awesome. And they've played before in the playoffs, and it's been great. So that's hanging out there. Although New Pal has they played Decatur Central early in the year. That'll be a fun game to see. Decatur, another team that's moving up from 5A to 6A. So you have some teams moving up that won titles last year, including Heritage Hills too. They're moving up to 4A from 3A. So a lot of really good teams in different classes this year. So that's kind of an interesting storyline as well. But it should be, like I said, that Super 25 is out. We'll have a lot more preview coverage. Our Super Teams will be out, which is best players in Central Indiana. That'll be out, I believe, on Monday. So, a lot more coming.
Did I make the list?
You're on there, yeah, for sure.
That's first time ever. I always have to ask, man. That's position I played, man. There you go. Well, Kyle Nedrip from the Indy Star, make sure you're going there. Have a subscription, first of all, so you can keep up with all of his incredible statewide coverage, although, you know, obviously focusing on central Indiana for the most part, but covers everything and knows about everything. Brother, we appreciate you. Great to see you again.
All right. Sounds good, Jim. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Kyle Nedrip joining us here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio. We've got more coming up. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio, here on this Wednesday. Glad to have you along. Dylan Sin from the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette rejoins us as well. Man, so I've been, you know, obviously out of touch with IU football a little bit over the last week. And I know they're pushing. They're only, like I said, 2 weeks from this Saturday, man, opens the season. And it's a big difference between basketball, especially – I'm a little surprised on how far along Indiana basketball looked. I'll be honest with you, both offensively and defensively. Obviously it is much tougher to get a football team together, especially when the faces have changed, and even more especially when the face changes at your point guard position, which is quarterback. It's more than a point guard. You know, the quarterback is more than just a point guard. It's a little bit of everything, to be honest with you, because they have so much decision-making to do, so much reading to do, so much knowledge that they have to – it starts and ends with them every play. That doesn't happen in basketball. I mean, as a point guard, you can pass off to one guy, and there may be, you know, five, six other passes before you touch the ball again. So in football, it begins and ends with the quarterback position. Although – I think Indiana is a better team this year than last year. I have continued to see nothing but Indiana being placed below, say, Illinois. I use them as a benchmark. Obviously, the national media thinks that Illinois is further along. The only reason I can point out is because they got their quarterback returning. Season.
They return 16 starters from that 10-win team. So they return – they're a more known quantity, even if you can look right at some of the guys IU brought in and say, those guys are really good. Illinois is more of a known quantity, I think.
Right. Yeah, because they don't know what Indiana's offense will be like with Fernando Mendoza. Had to get that out of the way. But I think that they're just going to be better. Now – does he read as well? I don't know. Did he have 41 sacks partly because he took some of those sacks? How many of those were his fault? Sometimes it's a quarterback's fault. Did he not get rid of the ball? I find it hard to believe that he didn't get rid of the ball much because he threw for 3,000 yards, so the ball comes out of his hand. Did he try to run? I don't know him well enough to know all of those things. And, you know, they just had their first scrimmage. And so Cignetti talked about a lot of penalties, which just means there's a lot of stuff to clean up, but that's a lot of stuff to clean up in a short period of time. Although fortunately you basically get 3 weeks to continue to clean this stuff up. Let's be honest. And I'm not complaining about Indiana's schedule, because they play three teams that are in a lot of people's top 10 right now. Three. Not a lot of teams are going to play three top 10 teams. So I'm telling people, get off the schedule. I don't care about last year. Focus on this year, people. And Indiana's going to have its deal laid out for him, and we're going to know about this team much quicker than last year, Dylan, because their toughest three-game stretch is games 4, 5, and 6.
Yeah. I mean, like I've been saying, if they come out of that stretch 4-2 or 5-1, you're looking at a team that's going to do some damage in the second half of the season, I think. Like, they if they win even one of those, I think they will win at least one, and I think they could probably have a good chance of winning two. But if you win even one of those, you're feeling really good about where you are, not only as a team, but as a program, because that'll be 2 years in a row where you have done a really good job of putting a team together.
Yeah, I think that they have to go 5-1 if they're thinking about a return to the college football playoffs. That's to ensure that they don't have to win at Penn State, because if you were to go 4-2, you would have to go 6-0 on that backside, and that would include a win at Ohio, or at Penn State, rather. So don't put the monkey on your own back. Now, winning at Iowa is, first of all, the Illinois game, because that's at home. I think that Indiana is just as good, if not better, than Illinois, because I think the offenses, I'll give them equality. But I don't know that, does Illinois have the receiving level of receiving core that Indiana has?
Not on paper. I don't think so. Especially if EJ Williams is healthy. I've been kind of having this thought throughout camp, is that EJ Williams is the real swing player for this offense, because you know you have two really good receivers. You know that Elijah Surratt and Omar Cooper are two really, really good receivers. Can you find a third one? Is it Mekhi Jackson from Appalachian State? Is it EJ Williams? And I think it could be EJ Williams from what we've seen. If he's healthy, he's as talented as anyone they have on that roster, right? Like, there are going to be guys on this roster who have a chance to be good at receiver, but I think he has the best physical tools. We heard Chris Signetti talk while you were gone, Jim. We heard him talk about LeBron Bond, true freshman, who they believe is going to help them this season. He has really stood out in fall camp. So can you find that third receiver for Fernando Mendoza? And they know they have two. Can you find the third one? I think EJ Williams could be that guy. And I think if he is, boy, this offense really takes a step to another level.
And that's not to say that you don't find a third and a fourth with the opportunity of those guys being in there. And that would just open it up even more, because you know that they've upgraded the tight end position, which didn't get used much last year at all as far as the offensive side of it. And that's something that Kirk Signetti teams had used before, at least to a more of a degree than they did last year at Indiana. Now, I don't think they had the pass catchers that they wanted or the experience that they wanted at the tight end position, but they went out and got somebody in that with the Tennessee transfer, former Notre Dame transfer. And so that kind of maybe elevates that a little bit. And the running backs room, Indiana wasn't bad there last year, but they seemed to be just a little better there this year with the addition of BB and once he gets healthy. But Roman Hemby from a proven commodity at didn't he kind of put it on Indiana last year, as a matter of fact, didn't he? I can't remember.
He did. He had that long 75-yard touchdown run when they played Maryland, and I think that was part of it. Was like, hey, he is not his stats the last couple of seasons have not been overly impressive, but part of that has been because Maryland hasn't had a great offensive line, and also because he has had to carry the entire load in the run game all by himself. And he will not have to do that this year. I think BB will be a solid, solid back for them. I think Kalon Black is terrific. I am all in on Kalon Black as being a guy who's going to take some carries this year. And I think that both of those guys should take some load off of Roman Hemby. And if he is healthy and he is at full strength, he is as good of a running back as there is in the Big Ten. So that was a huge get for them, not only for who he is, but for who they were able to put around him.
Yeah, both of those guys are big play threats at any time. I saw Kalon Black do it. When was that? That he had that just bam, gone. I forget when he did that. But both have breakaway speed. And when you have the throwing capacity that Indiana has, which forces the strain on the defense to cover those guys and open up the middle, well, obviously you're giving yourself an opportunity for guys like Roman Hemby and crew to just break one, and they can do that. That's, you know, Indiana has weapons at all three levels, and you have to have that. And then you look at the defensive side, they're loaded there at all three levels. So Indiana has the weapons they need. It's hard to believe we're saying this again, even though it's the second season. It's hard to believe that we're really following up the season we did with talking about Indiana being loaded on both sides. I know that there are teams that have had three All-Americans returning, but did any team have three defensive All-Americans returning?
I don't know of one. I think it was five or six. I know for Walter Camp specifically, there was, I think, four teams that had three All-Americans returning. I don't think
That was total, not just on one side of the ball. Right, that was
exactly
total.
Right. It was four or five teams that had total three. I don't think anyone had three on defense specifically other than IU. That's really impressive.
Yeah, especially we're talking about Indiana, and more so because every one of those guys came from James Madison, I believe.
Yep, all three, Kamara, Fisher, and Pons. Yeah.
Well, maybe next year we'll see if they can play in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. All three of those guys probably will be playing on Sundays.
Yeah, 100%, I think. And the question on defense that is kind of surrounding this team right now, and we're going to get some more information here in just a few hours, is Lewis Moore. And the situation going on with him right now, he is a probable starting safety for IU. He was terrific for IU in 2023. I thought he was one of the toughest losses for them in the portal last offseason when he went to Ole Miss. And so he came back this year. He submitted a waiver to the NCAA for an extra year of eligibility because he's only played he had played 4 years in NCAA after playing 3 years in JUCO, or two. He had played 3 years in the NCAA after playing 3 years in JUCO, right? And so he had submitted a waiver. The NCAA had said no, and he has now sued the NCAA and said, well, how is this different from Diego Pavia? Diego Pavia, remember the Vanderbilt quarterback who sued successfully, and the NCAA put in a rule saying basically years in JUCO and NAIA do not count against your eligibility. And so he should have a year of eligibility left because he's only played 3 years of NCAA football. The difference is that you have a five-year clock that you're supposed to complete your college career within 5 years, depending on medical red shirts and COVID years. Now, the NCAA has said that he did not complete, his five-year clock has run out, right? And so that is the argument they're making why he's different from Diego Pavia. So he has sued the NCAA. He is seeking a temporary restraining order, what's called a TRO, to let him play starting this season. Like he let him play the season at least.
And I think that decision is due today.
Yeah, well,
in Texas.
Yes, the hearing is today. I'm not sure when the decision's coming, but the hearing is today. The judge will hear his case on whether to give him a temporary restraining order at 2 o'clock this afternoon, I believe, at a court in Texas. So unclear when the judge will rule. He has been granted basically an emergency hearing, so it will be a very quick ruling one way or the other. Might not be today, might be tomorrow or early next week, but it is coming. And so he is going to have a chance to present his case. On paper, to me, his case looks pretty similar to Diego Pavia's. I don't really see a huge difference there. The NCAA has tried to split the baby on that.
It's the five-year thing.
Yeah. And so, there was a COVID year in there as well. So we'll have to see if that changes anything. But he is going to have his day in court, and we'll see. And if he does come back, he's almost certainly going to start for them at safety next to Amari Farrell, which would form one of the better safety duos in the Big Ten as well, I think. I think that both of those players are terrific. So that is kind of the big question with this defense right now.
Yeah, I talked to a friend of mine, a former attorney with the NCAA. He worked in various forms of that office, and he did not think that I'll tell you what he says. Exactly. He posted on his X account, but in a nutshell, he doesn't think that he has a great shot because of that. But here's my response is they changed the JUCO rule. That means that could give you up to two more years of actual NCAA eligibility. So therefore, why does that not change the five-year thing? A. B, precedent has been set. How many different players have been allowed to play outside of the five-year window with a medical redshirt, with a COVID year, whatever the case may be, it's not like they have not already gone outside of the five-year window. So to me, the NCAA has set their own precedent by doing that and then changing the JUCO rule on top of that. But not after being sued. So I think that it's all going to come down to this temporary restraining order. If he doesn't get that, it's not going to look good unless he can get an emergency court appearance, because that could drag on. And he's already losing valuable time because he was practicing with the team, but I don't believe he is still?
It's unclear. I think he still is. He's hoping to be able to play with the team in week one. I think it's kind of the idea of getting the temporary restraining order, but it's kind of unclear whether he's currently practicing with the team.
The opinion of Michael Mangarelli was that, you know, obviously, as you mentioned, the temporary restraining order in district court in Texas today was to bar the NCAA from even making a ruling. That tells me, this is coming from Michael Mangarelli, that he knows he's not getting a favorable waiver ruling and needs to preemptively block them from making a decision, which could be correct, or it could be just add to the chance of not having to wait for this to come, because they're 2 weeks away from game one. So there's that. It will be interesting. The NCAA has won very, very few court cases because, in my opinion, because they keep losing so many. They're all connected. Like I just talked about, this five-year thing. Well, it's all connected. You changed this rule, and you allowed this guy or girl or whomever to play in a sixth year. It was a medical redshirt. I don't care the reason, you allowed it. Now you've changed this rule over here. So, hey, I have more eligibility. I'm not a lawyer and I don't play one on TV, but I would be arguing like hell that, hey, you've already gone outside your own five-year window. That has nothing to do with nothing anymore. So we will know probably today, I guess, if a ruling comes down in that temporary restraining order and it benefits Lewis Moore, does the NCAA then push for a quicker resolution, or do they just throw in the white flag on that? I don't know.
Yeah, that is the question, is how they respond if he does get a favorable ruling. Part of his argument stems from, hey, you're doing the same thing that you've been doing for all these years. You're trying to cap my earning potential, which is an antitrust violation, right? Like, I'm going to make NIL or rev share money at IU this year, and you're trying to take that away from me.
But couldn't somebody who says that, hey, I didn't get to play a fourth season, but it would be a seventh year because of this, whatever. You could run the same argument no matter what.
You probably could. It's a question of where the court draws the line. I think, is this the place they're going to draw the line, where they're going to say, well, you played 3 years of JUCO, the one was a redshirt. You played 3 years of NCAA football. That's enough. Right, right. It's unclear what they're going to do. I'm genuinely curious as to which way this goes, because as you said, the NCAA has lost a lot of these cases over the years. The Diego Pavia case was a genuine kind of landmark one in which they basically said that to a certain extent, JUCO and NAIA does not count as much against your eligibility, right? And so this is kind of stemming from that. And will this be another landmark of pushing this forward? Are we going to kind of see the five-year rule kind of go by the wayside a little bit? I don't know about that. The bigger question is, do you get the TRO, the temporary restraining order, just to be able to play? You're not looking for a favorable ruling right now. In the end, the only ruling you're looking for is the NCAA stopped from denying the eligibility, essentially, right away? And so that's kind of the situation Lewis Moore is in. And if he's back, boy, that's a huge piece in IU secondary. And to be clear, he has been practicing with the team, but if he is out there, he is a really, really valuable piece. I mean, 2 years ago, I don't know how many people remember the end of the Tom Allen era, because it does seem so long ago, but Lewis Moore was arguably the best player on that defense. 82 tackles, 3 interceptions, 3 forced fumbles. He was a hitter in that secondary. And then he went to Ole Miss last year, and he didn't play quite as much. He dealt with some injury issues. He played 11 games and had 2 starts for a team that was pretty darn good. They went 9-3, 10-3, I should say. And now he's back, and I think he could be a real, real important piece for that secondary if he's allowed on the field. And we'll have to see.
Absolutely. That would only bolster a defense that's already pretty damn good. But you know that Indiana is anxiously awaiting that information without question. Take a quick break. The great Dylan Sin from the Fort Wayne Journal Gazette is with us. Got more coming up. Indiana Sports Beat Radio with Jim Coyle. Dylan Sin along for the ride from the Fort Wayne Journal Gazette. Make sure you have your subscription if you're up in the Fort Wayne area. And always following Dylan Sin. Back with more after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Speed Radio, here on this Wednesday. Glad to have you along. Dylan Sin from the Fort Wayne Journal Gazette with you as well. And I'm looking at right now, the AP preseason poll came out. And I'm looking at I'm trying to figure out who wrote this, because they're an idiot. Week one, they're talking about the big games right now set up by the rankings. And of course, week one, you've got number one Texas and number three Ohio State, which those rankings don't mean diddly to me, because we don't know who's what. Week two, number 14 Michigan versus number 18 Oklahoma. Both of those teams were also Rams last year, so we'll see. One has a freshman quarterback. This is mostly on name. Week four, the Illini, number 12, Illinois, at number 20, Indiana. Here's the first sentence of this guy's synopsis on this particular follow-up. Last year's Cinderella story, which I'm assuming he means Indiana, gets to try and run it back with an even easier schedule in 2025. See, when I hear that from people, I just want to talk to them and say, are you just dumb? Do you not realize that besides number 12, Illinois, they play at Iowa, at top 10, Oregon, at top 5, Penn State? How is that easier than anything, number one, especially last year? And how is that easy? It's become this mantra that people are hung up on. And how do you just ignore who they're playing?
Yeah, I don't understand it. I really don't. And every once in a while you see it just pop up. And what people love to do is they love to post the first 3 games of the season. And it's like, well, look at this schedule. Look at this murderer's row that IU is playing. And then they don't post the conference schedule at all, because doing that would completely defeat their argument. And so it really is one of those things where it just has taken on a life of its own, to the point that you're never going to convince people that IU doesn't play a weak schedule until they get out there and like surprise Penn State or Oregon or beat Illinois, right? You're not going to convince people. Like if Indiana goes 10-2 and their only losses are at Penn State and at Oregon, there is going to be an enormous push, to keep them out of the playoffs. I think that would probably be enough to get them in if Illinois is pretty good too. But there would be an enormous
They have to win at Iowa, unless they win at Oregon and Penn State instead.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The question for me is what the committee would do with them if they go 10-2 and their only losses are at Penn State and at Oregon. And I think there would be an enormous push to keep them out. And obviously last year it didn't work, because there was a huge push last year to kind of devalue what they had done, even though they laid waste to everyone who was in their path. Here's something that I would like to say about people who think that IU didn't beat anyone last year. Look at that Nebraska game again. Indiana took Nebraska behind the woodshed. They dominated that game so thoroughly that their backup quarterback played the second half and outscored Nebraska 28-0. Nebraska went 7-6. It wasn't a great Nebraska team, okay? But Nebraska did not have another loss last season that was by more than, like, two scores.
Not only that, the very next week they took Ohio State to the end.
Right down to the wire. Beating that Nebraska team 56-7 was as impressive as any top 10 win you're going to see. That was a team operating at such a high level. It was one of the best performances of the entire season by anyone. And it does not get credit for it because Nebraska went 7-6 and they weren't that great. But beating a team that's just okay in the Big Ten 56-7, that's something. That matters, right? And we can talk all day about Michigan and how they beat Michigan, and then Michigan went and beat Ohio State and beat Alabama. That's great too. I think Indiana played pretty well that day, especially on defense. But the Nebraska game to me is the one where it's like, that was a really darn good football. Oh, who did you beat? That was a really darn good win they had. And the idea that they went out there and beat a bunch of nobodies on the way and won 11 cupcakes to get into the playoff and had it handed to them is just not true. And it won't be true this year if it happens again. And I don't really, it has become this thing where it's like, well, IU was never good before, so they can't possibly be good now. And that's just not how college football works. It's just not, especially in the era of the transfer portal.
No, and part of it is driven by the SEC zealots, of course, but, of course. Part of it is just driven by ignorance. If how you can look at that schedule and say it's an even easier schedule, you can't control who was what.
Yeah.
Michigan was, and Washington both played in the previous national championship game. You can't control what happened. But that same Michigan team that Indiana did beat the national champion, Ohio State, at Ohio State in the last game of the regular season. That should have – it is what it is. But that's why Indiana has to – they have to do something. They need to do something. They need to shock – go out to Oregon and win. Really do something surprising. I definitely think you have to win at Iowa, no matter what. And like I said, unless you were to win at Oregon and Penn State and success of both of those, but you've got a win, a marquee win. They just really need to get a marquee win. Is it fair? Not necessarily, because people sure forget that it was not that very long ago that Indiana was routinely every year playing Michigan, Michigan State, Penn State, Ohio State, and generally getting one of the Big Ten West Division's best teams year in, year out. I mean, how many years in a row did they have four games against top 10 teams? It's crazy, but now that they're winning and they're breaking into the old boy network, that's not the SEC, particularly the SEC, not a fan.
Yeah. One thing I'd like to kind of preemptively push back on, because we're going to hear this if it happens, is say IU goes 8-4, right? And they're a good team, but they don't rise to the level of a great team, right? And they don't make the playoff and they go to a decent bowl game and whatever, right? There are going to be people, of course, that pop up and say, well, this proves they weren't very good last year, right? And I want to tell you right now, those two things have nothing to do with each other. Last year was last year. Last year was as special of a run as I have ever seen. They darn well earned their way into that playoff. And they just ran up and down the field against everyone they played. It was a type of dominance that you might never see again at Indiana, even if they have better teams. The level of dominance they had against some of those teams last year was just so impressive. And whatever happens this year, it does not cheapen what they did last year. They could go 4-8. It doesn't matter. That does not cheapen what they did last year. They deserved everything they got last year. And it was just a really special season. And IU fans, I'm probably preaching to the choir here, but to anyone who is not already convinced, don't let whatever happens this year color your memories of last year, because last year was just so special that it will be remembered. You should remember it as one of the greatest seasons that you will ever see, regardless of what happens this year. It really is. It really was a lot of fun.
Well, when you have a season where 8-4 is considered the bottom for your team, and your team has won 8 games, maybe 5 times in the 127 or whatever, however long it is, history, that's kind of funny. So what's up next for you, my friend?
Yep, I'll be out there. High school football starts next week, so I'm all over the place this week and obviously still covering camps as well. Looking forward to following this Lewis Moore news this afternoon as well. So all over the place as usual, but looking forward to the start of football. It's getting pretty close here.
Buddy, we appreciate you. It was fun having you on all day. Fun getting to just hash it out. We may have to do that again. I enjoyed it.
Absolutely, Jim. You let me know. Thanks for having me on, as always.
Appreciate it. Make sure you're a subscriber to the Fort Wayne Journal Gazette if you're up in that area, and following Dylan Sin. Appreciate you, brother. We'll see you soon.
All right. Looking forward to it.
Absolutely. Dylan Sin joining us here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio. That is going to wrap it up for us today. Back tomorrow to do it again. I believe tomorrow may have Dustin or Brian Walsh on. So tomorrow's Thursday. Yeah, I believe that is the day. So former IU assistant coach Brian Walsh, now over at Ohio State. So looking forward to talking to him and much more. The coach will be with us, I believe. There's plenty to get to. Thanks a lot for joining us. Appreciate you guys as always. Until tomorrow, I'm Jim Coyle. I will see you on the radio.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
Hello, everyone. Jim Coyle from Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Thank you so much for listening to our content. We hope you enjoy it. Make sure you're a subscriber at either your favorite podcast download or on our YouTube channel at Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Either way, just give us a like on any of those. We would greatly appreciate it. It helps us immensely. Thank you and have a great day.